ankles were strapped to the bed. They were in stirrups and I was gassed. I had plenty of gas and they just snatched away the baby. You weren't allowed to see him or touch him, anything like that, or hold him. It was just like a piece of my soul had died and it's still dead.
Straight away was taken out of the labour ward. By the records, it only took 30 minutes to transfer him from the labour ward to the nursery. So it was gone.
I believe that I experienced psychological torture because I didn't sign on the first occasion and she got very annoyed with me and she said, "You'll have to sign eventually. You have to sign."
I always wanted to keep him. We went back to the hospital to revoke the consent, that she told me I was too late, that he'd already been placed with adoptive family.
It is believed that 150,000 women had their babies taken against their will by some churches or adoption agencies between about 1950 and the end of the 70s. And the voices you heard there were from Newcastle, because recently four mothers came forward and spoke with the ABC. And in response to their stories, the organisation that oversees all Catholic health infrastructure, as well as the Sisters of Mercy in Singleton Congregation and the Diocese of Maitland-Newcastle, offered an expression of sorrow and their offer of support to those affected by the past adoption practices. So what were those practices, and did they happen in South Australia? Well, young mothers or unmarried mothers' homes included the House of Mercy in Walkerville, the Kate Cox Babies and Girls Homes, the McBride Maternity Hospital in Menindee, the Mareeba Babies Hospital, St Joseph's Maternity Home and Vaughan House. And these were run by all sorts of organisations, including the Catholics, the Methodists, the Salvation Army Brethren and other organisations, including the state government. Now, Evelyn Robertson knows about adoption personally and professionally. She works as an adoption counsellor and has been doing so since 1989. Ms. Robertson, welcome to ABC North and West Mornings.
Thank you, Anne. Good morning.
Let's talk about unmarried mothers. How were they treated in the past?
Well, they were treated very differently from married women because married women had done the right thing and got married first before becoming pregnant. Or before having their babies, at least. Unmarried mothers were considered to be shameful. They had done the wrong thing, and many of their families were ashamed of them. And in many cases, they were told that they had to be hidden away. So they had breached the social standards of the day, and were very much looked down upon.
So being hidden away, what did that mean?
Well, sometimes, for example, young women in country towns would be sent to the city. Sometimes women in the city would be sent to the country or even to another state. Stories would be told. They had gone away to work, or they had gone away to study or to look after a sick relative. So often the families invented a web of secrecy to cover up what was actually happening.
And where did they go?
Many of them went to unmarried mothers' homes, such as the ones that you mentioned, which were also adoption agencies. They also operated adoption agencies. Some of them went to family members, and some of them actually went to work sort of as domestics. Some they would stay with a family, and they would work in the home with a family away from their own home.
As they progressed in their pregnancy and potentially began to show and become quite big, what happened?
Well, mostly they stayed indoors. Some of them, if they went out, they actually bought a wedding ring and wore a wedding ring to make themselves appear more respectable. But mostly they stayed indoors. If they were in the homes, they mostly just stayed within the home. Some women never left the home for, 5 or 6 months prior to the birth.
So when it came to giving birth, what happened?
Well, people's experiences are different, in some ways very similar. Often they were drugged. Often they were unattended. Many mothers report that they were left alone through labour and they were not allowed to have a family member or friend or anyone with them. Mostly they were not prepared for labour. In many cases, they were not allowed to attend antenatal classes because of not being married. So really, they were discriminated against because of their marital status. So often they had no actual preparation for the birth and had no idea what to expect. Some of them were actually verbally abused during labour. If they cried out or complained, they were told things like, well, it's your own fault, you shouldn't have got yourself into this situation, shut up and don't bother the other mothers. Some women report that students were allowed to examine them without their consent, and even sometimes after they had refused consent, their wishes were ignored. So generally, they were made to feel quite unimportant. And often the experience of birth was very traumatic for them.
Were they separated from the married women as such?
Sometimes. Some of the babies were born in the homes and some were born in the hospitals. And in some cases after the baby was born, women were put in a ward with other mothers, married women who had their babies there. My experience was that I was put in a ward with about 40 other mothers who all had their babies with them 24 hours a day, and I was the only one there without a baby. In other situations, they were completely separated from the married women and put in a separate place. Sometimes they were just put in a room by themselves. But in almost all cases, the babies were taken from them.
So, and how did that happen, the actual taking of the baby?
Well, many women didn't even see their baby. Often the baby was just whisked away immediately after the birth. Some women were prevented from seeing the baby by having a member of staff, block their vision, stand in front of them or hold up a sheet so that they couldn't see the baby. Some women asked to see their children and were refused. So many women did not get the opportunity to see their children at all.
There is a Senate inquiry going on at the moment into what's called forced adoption practices. Now, those words, forced adoption, what does it mean?
Well, there is some controversy about the use of the word force. Certainly, many, many women felt that they were coerced, that they did not have a free choice, that they were told that they had no choice. There were also reports of illegal practices. For example, there were laws in various states that said that consent could be revoked after a period of time, and some women report that they tried to revoke their consent within the time and were refused. There were laws that said that consent could not be signed until a certain period of time had passed after the birth, yet mothers report they were made to sign consent prior to that time. And some women report that they never signed a consent and that the adoption took place without their consent. So these sorts of practices come under coercion or force when people talk about past adoptions.
Are you aware of these occurrences happening in South Australia?
Yes, certainly, yes.
My guest on the show at the moment is Evelyn Robertson, an adoption counsellor since 1989 here in South Australia. And you've touched on a little bit of your own experience. Did that happen in South Australia?
No, that happened in Scotland before I came to Australia.
Were the practices similar?
They were similar. I did not go to an unmarried mother's home. I had my child in a hospital. But I was not allowed to attend antenatal classes because I was unmarried. I was not allowed to have anyone with me throughout my labour. I was not allowed to have my baby by my bed like all the other mothers. So my experience was very similar to the experiences of mothers here.
So what was it like during that labour?
It was frightening. I had, as I said, I had no preparation, and I felt that I wasn't included. People didn't speak to me. I felt I was very much left to manage. I was scared. I was lonely, it was not a happy experience. It was not what having your first baby should be like.
You said you were in a ward of 40 other mothers. When it came to things like feeding time and you didn't have your baby there with you, what effect did that have on you?
It was heartbreaking. Even now, after 41 years, it still upsets me to talk about it. But I think that the worst time was visiting time, because all the other mothers had visitors who were bringing flowers and gifts and congratulating them and, you know, holding the babies and admiring the babies. And so to be in a huge room when all that was going on and my experience was so completely different was very painful. And sometimes I drew the curtains round the bed and just cried.
And what was the reaction of your own family?
My family was overseas at the time. I had been living independently for some time. My mother did come to the hospital. She did come over when my child was born, and she was very supportive. But it just did not seem that there was any way that I could keep my child. And I was told, like mothers in South Australia and in many other places, we were told that it was in our child's best interests for them to be adopted, that we had nothing to offer. In fact, I was told that if I kept my son, I would ruin his life. I was told that he would turn into a juvenile delinquent. And in fact, it was virtually impossible to raise a child single-handed if you didn't have support, because there was no financial support like a sole parent pension or a single parenting allowance. So if you didn't have support from the child's father and your family wasn't prepared to financially support you, it was virtually impossible. There was very little in the way of childcare, and people wouldn't employ a single mother. In fact, when women got pregnant, they lost their jobs. In those days, even married women had to leave their jobs when they were pregnant. So financially, it was really impossible to raise a child unless you had a lot of support from someone else.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 20 when Stephen was born.
So was age a factor in these practices? Were all the women young and unaware of, perhaps, of those legal rights?
Most of them were. Some of them were very young. Some of them were underage, you know, were 14 or 15. And most of them probably were in their late teens, early 20s. Socially, we were made to feel like outcasts, and we weren't given information because we were often just made to feel that we had done the wrong thing and we had to keep quiet about it. That's why there was so much secrecy around it. It was a very shameful thing.
And shame is often, and guilt, I suppose, is often associated with religious aspects of life. Mm. What role did the church, in its various different forms, play in these adoption practices?
as you said before about the unmarried mothers' homes and babies' homes, they were almost all run by religious organisations. And the women who did go to them were often told that they should pray for forgiveness for their sins, and that the way to atone for having sinned was to do the right thing and give their child to a good home. So that was very much the religious sort of doctrine. No matter which religion it was, the feelings were very much along those lines.
Well, Martin Laverty, the CEO of Catholic Health Australia, issued a statement to women, mainly in New South Wales, just a few days ago, saying sorry for the adoption practices that occurred in a small number of the homes in New South Wales. And I actually talked with him yesterday and asked him if he was aware of any of these adoption practices happening in South Australia.
Look, none have come to my attention, but the unfortunate reality is that right across Australia in the period 1940 through to 1970, it was thought in many instances that young unmarried women and their children would be better off if adoption occurred, if a child was in fact taken from their birth mother and placed in the care of another family. Now, I'm a father. I'm expecting my third child to be born in just 2 months' time. And I look back in that and I think, if I was in that circumstance, if someone thought my child would be better off with someone else, I can only start to imagine the grief and the trauma that I would have had to have lived with for so many years. So in approaching these matters, in looking back, what was a common and a widespread practice years gone is today continuing to cause pain and grief to so many. And in the discussion you're leading today, it won't at all surprise me if there's people listening at home that have lived this themselves. And to them, for the role that organisations that I'm involved with in the past, if our organisations contributed to their pain and their grief, we say sincerely sorry. But we're going a step further by looking to the Senate inquiry that's currently underway into past adoption practices, where there is an opportunity for a national scheme to be put in place to make it easier to get access to birth records, to make it easier to get access to counselling, and respond to the different and individual concerns that arise out of different people's experiences. It's very important to acknowledge that so many people have been hurt by these practices of the past, and each of their experiences are different, and they will each seek different solutions. The Senate is thinking about that, and we've outlined to the Senate our support for a national scheme that is going to attempt to bring healing to so many who continue to live with this grief.
That was Martin Laverty, CEO of Catholic Healthcare in Australia. Evelyn Robinson, do you think that South Australian women who were forced to give their children up for adoption, do you think that sort of apology will help them?
Yes, I believe so. I think it's an acknowledgement of what happened. Unfortunately, I mean, you mentioned guilt before, and many women were made to feel guilty for having become pregnant and were told, as he said, to do the right thing and give the child up for adoption. But then afterwards, many of them suffered enormous guilt for having allowed their child to be taken. Whether or not they felt they were forced or coerced, the child was still gone, and many women felt an awful responsibility for that. And that was another reason for them not talking about it. They found it so hard to explain to people how it could possibly have happened. And so they often carried a double level of guilt with them throughout their lives. And many of them still find that difficult to deal with. And having lost a child in this way creates a grief which is complex and different from other types of grief, because there is no finality to it, because as far as the mother is aware, the child is probably still alive. And the mother doesn't know what the final outcome, you know, of that will be, doesn't know what happened to the child, if she will ever meet the child again. And so the grief tends to just grumble on for years and years. And I'm very happy to hear him talk about providing the opportunities for counselling.
And on that note, in fact, Martin Laverty did give me a number that Catholic Health Australia has set up for those seeking access to records or counselling arising from their adoption experience in a Catholic organisation. And the number is 1-800-613-155. That's 1-800-613-155. That's if you had an experience in a Catholic organisation to do with adoption. There's also another number you should be aware of. It's the Post-Adoption Support Services at Relationships Australia, and the number to call there is 1-300-364-277. That's 1-300-364-277. Now, what I will do is put these numbers up on our Facebook page just now, so if you didn't get a chance to look at them, they will be there. You can find them, and you can always give us a call here at ABC North and West, and we'll give you the numbers out when you've got a pen handy. And I thank you, Evelyn Robinson, for sharing so generously both your story and history as a counsellor here in South Australia.
Thank you very much, Anne, and thank you for bringing this to people's attention. It's great that public awareness is being increased around adoption issues. Thank you.
Mornings with Anne Jones.